All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today it is time for another fan talk. I am with Marco from Vienna Falcons on Twitter, and we're going to talk about the Falcons' win over the Seahawks, their upcoming game against the Buccaneers, and also get into some of Marco's interesting statistical analysis on today's episode.
You are locked on Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
So, Marco, welcome back to the show. I believe you were the second fan talk we had. If I'm not mistaken, they're all blurring together. But I think you were the second one. We had you on back in July, I think, maybe. And you gave some interesting statistical thoughts then. I remember whatever you said was interesting. I can't remember specifically what it was, as I say many times. When you do this podcast as much, everything blurs into one. You're like, oh, he said something interesting, but I don't remember what it was. But welcome back, my friend.
Yeah. Thanks for having me again. We talked about Kyle Shanahan and the Super Bowl play call.
Oh, yes.
I was like the fourth person back then that was defending Kyle Shanahan. And a few months later, it seems like everybody wants Kyle Shanahan back, and he was always the perfect coach. And see how the tide has turned a little bit.
Yeah, we saw the Falcons' offense continue its progression this past week against Seattle. Another solid performance, a strong start, thanks in part to some turnovers, but overall, certainly the play calling, which has been something that's been under quite a lot of scrutiny, and I'm sure I believe you have some additional statistical analysis that may put it under more or less scrutiny. we'll talk about that later. But what were your thoughts watching the Falcons win over the Seahawks this past Monday?
I thought first it's great to get a road win against a playoff contender in the conference. That's just you never can take those for granted. I thought they played a pretty good game, which was very sloppy at the end and kind of I think by the end of the fourth quarter they were pretty much on even terms, I'd say. So if the Seahawks pulled off the field goal and then went on to win in overtime, I don't think I would be like they stole a game or anything. Like they were pretty much on eye to eye level, I thought, the whole game. If you take the whole game as the whole experience, and so I thought it's good. You have to win ugly also sometimes, and you cannot always stomp teams like they did with Dallas. And so I thought it's a nice win that will certainly help down the road in the playoff scenarios. And I think also, like, when looking at the statistics, this was the first time all season that the Falcons actually gained less yards per play than the opponent. Like, they have been losing a lot of games, but they actually won every time the yards per play battle. And this was the first time where a team really outplayed them on a per play basis, the Seahawks. So I think to get away with winning there on the road, that's a very nice thing to have. And it definitely looked like the offense made some strides. I really liked the three tight end sets that they also held them in their pocket so long to unpack them against the teams to have troubles dealing with them. That spoke to some, I would say, intelligent game planning, which was not always the case this season. So I take the progress and I take the win, and I think the most you can be happy about right around this time of year.
Understandable, yeah. I thought going into the game, we didn't do a preview episode on this podcast, but mm-hmm. I thought going into this game, this was a pretty evenly matched performance. I thought the injuries to the Seahawks defense would hopefully give the Falcons the edge. I think it did in a lot of degree. We saw the team successful on third downs. I think that was owed partially to them getting some very manageable situations, some third and shorts, like third and fives and whatnot, that are a lot easier for this offense to contend with. And, mm-hmm. and you're not as afraid as the Seahawks pass rush in those situations. And I think that's a testament to, good play calling on those early downs and good execution as well. So, it all worked out, and I'm with you. This was a game where if the Falcons won ugly, so be it. They just needed to find a way to win this game. They just really couldn't afford to lose this game and expect to still make, you know, to against some of their upcoming opponents, because I do feel like Minnesota and New Orleans and also potentially Carolina are better teams than the Seahawks team at this point in time, given all their injuries. So, to come away with a win, no matter how ugly it was, I think is definitely worthwhile.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you mentioned the turnovers. I think, you know, it's fine if you win by turnovers when you have had so few of them over the course of the season. Then that's a regression that was bound to happen. Mm-hmm. Simply, like the number of takeaways that the Falcons had so far was so low that there was an uptick to be expected, and now this team is still, like, after this game, the Falcons still have the worst starting field position of all teams in the NFL. They're still 32nd in average line of scrimmage for a drive start. And that's with this uptick game of against Seattle, but they still have so much ground to make up in terms of takeaways and in terms of special teams play, which was, to be frank, quite bothersome against the Seahawks. And so if the offense is put constantly in the league worst starting position, it's really hard to put points on the board. And if the defense helps just a little bit, like they did with the profound interception and some key third down stops, suddenly the offense looks potent and can put up 28 points on the road. And that's basically a fine result. And I think if some of the defensive and special teams performances earlier in the season would have been on that level, what they showed against the Seahawks, a lot of the Gary Kubiak talk would not have happened. That's kind of my guess, but that's probably for another podcast.
Yeah, I'm waiting for another bad Sark performance. I can bring out the Kubiak talk again, but we'll see what happens. And speaking of future Sark performances, let's talk about this Bucs game. What are some of the things that you're looking forward to seeing this Falcon team against this upcoming Bucs team that is going to be without Jameis Winston?
Yeah, I think the Falcons at this stage have no excuse to lose a game like this. I mean, there is like literally nothing about this Bucs team that should scare the Falcons, or that where they somehow don't match up well or something like that. I think the only thing standing in their way is that they usually tend to play down to Tampa Bay's level, even when they are the better team. And we've seen that also last year, and it's kind of a continuing problem with this team. Maybe this is kind of a possibility for them to really deliver a statement game and blow the Bucks out, which would be quite nice. Because on paper, I don't see where the Bucks should, you know, have an advantage here with Fitzpatrick starting, and so that kind of is really like the groundwork is laid for this to be a very winnable game. And if they don't win this, then I think we really have to be careful with the playoff talk going forward.
Yeah. You know, I sort of feel the same way, but as a noted Falcon pessimist, I always have to sort of figure out, okay, what's the way that the Falcons can lose this game? And I'm like, looking at the one thing that bothers me, or I guess it's two things, one and a half things. The one thing is something that we talked about on this podcast during the offseason when I, among a select handful of people were hyping up the Bucs this offseason, it was the concern about their wide receiver duo with Jackson and Evans. I know they certainly haven't lived up to expectations, and now having Fitzpatrick in the lineup, you wouldn't expect those guys to go off. But they are worth mentioning, though. That is the scary part of their offense, if they can get either one of those guys going. And we know Mike Evans has a habit of going off against the Falcons. And DeSean Jackson is the type of player, even though he hasn't always looked at every week this year, is the type of player that can really do damage to any type of defense, given his speed. But the main thing I guess I'm looking at is I'm looking at the Gerald McCoy versus Wes Schweitzer matchup. I think that is certainly something that could be a little problematic. I know Schweitzer struggled a little bit against Seattle. I think part of that is to blame with an injury that I think he suffered early in the game. I think he injured his right leg, and it seemed clear to me watching the tape that a lot of the times he was getting beat was when he was, because he was favoring that right leg and he just couldn't really put as much weight on it. And so guys like Richardson, guys like Bennett were able to sort of beat him to his outside shoulder, and he would lose balance from time to time because he was trying to put weight on that leg. And I, you know, I don't know what the injury status is, what the injury reports have been this week. I haven't been paying attention. I usually don't pay attention to that stuff, but I do wonder, you know, given that it was an issue, could it be, you know, you don't necessarily need to be playing at less than 100% against Gerald McCoy. And I do wonder if McCoy has a, sort of the monster game that we know he's capable of performing against the Falcons and really being disruptive. And then, you know, you follow that up with a guy like, you know, that frees up opportunities for Levante David and Quan Alexander to make plays. That is the one concern, and maybe the Falcons suffer some turnovers or stagnate early, and you know, or something like that, that really gives the Bucs, puts the Bucs in a favorable situation. I hope that doesn't happen. I don't expect that to happen, but if I'm sort of building, constructing the way that the Falcons get upset this week, then that's probably the one thing that concerns me.
Yeah, definitely. I think you're very spot on. It's I mean, he wasn't on the injury report, Schweitzer, this week, as far as I know. I think Andy Levitre was. So, but I think none of those were disclosed as how severe they are, but I think both should play. And we don't know the extent of the injury. So, yeah, that's definitely a concern. I think you're right in the sense also that when you look at the one area of strength for the Bucs team, then it would be the middle of that defense, definitely. And also looking at their numbers, it's a relative strength. I mean, the defense has been pretty horrible overall, but a relative strength of them has been stopping the run and especially stopping runs up the middle. And so I think if you want to compare it to other teams that we've faced, then the closest blueprint for a team like that are definitely Chicago, Miami, and the Jets games. And those were all teams where the offense really did struggle to string together drives and to string together first downs and get points on the board. And so that's definitely a way how I can see this game unfolding. If they have trouble up the middle with McCoy and we have, again, like with the Jets game, we have trouble with the ball exchange or something like that, and a turnover happens there, then definitely that can blow up the game plan pretty quickly. And on the other side of the ball, Tampa Bay also basically compares to the Miami and the Jets offense and the Chicago offense back then more favorably. So it's like we've had troubles before with teams that are built like that and that on paper should have less trouble of beating. And so there's definitely a blueprint for this game to become problematic. But that was all before the Dallas and Seattle wins. So let's see if this team has really turned the corner and kind of found its groove. And maybe they can carry it like they did last season and just start beating the teams that they are supposed to beat in convincing fashion, which so far this year we've yet to see, I guess.
Yeah. I do want to move on and get more insights in some of your statistical analysis, but I do want to remind the listeners that if they want to get geared up for their fantasy playoffs, they can check out Locked On Fantasy with Vinny Iyer on the Locked On Podcast Network, wherever podcasts are found. All right, Marco, you know, you do a lot of statistical analysis. I know I've gotten into some Twitter arguments with you about the offense and versus the defense. You echo some of the sentiments I believe in, that the defense needs to do more. And I think, you know, the last two games, while we talk quite a bit about the offense performing well, I do think the defense has sort of done a better job standing on their own these last two games. And I'm hoping that they can continue to progress as this season wears on, and help this team win. But I'll just give you the floor and sort of what interesting stats that you have come up with or at least seen this season that you want to share with the listeners?
Yeah. I agree with you that the defense has definitely stood on its own in the last two games, and I think we have to take into context, of course, with Dallas, that they were missing basically their two best offensive players in that game, and so we have kind of put an asterisk to that defensive performance. But moving forward, I took a look at the schedule of the remaining the games that the Falcons are going to face and how the offenses that they're going to face are stacking up in the league. And it's very interesting that the schedule, that the performance of the Falcons defense depends basically mostly on the quality of the opposing passing attack. That's kind of the most important part. The run offense of the opposing team basically has no correlation to how well the defense performs this season, but the passing offense does. And when you look at the games that we've played, we have basically, and I'm just going to do a binary, very simple dichotomy here, and I'm going to say above average passing offenses and below average passing offenses. When you look at that, we have faced three above average passing offenses so far, only three. And that would be Detroit, New England, and Seattle this week. And we have faced seven below average passing offenses so far. So we already see that our schedule is very tight on the quality opponents that we've faced so far. And moving forward, we are facing only one below average passing offense, which is Carolina, and they are 17th in passing DVOA. So basically just a hair below average. And all the other offenses that we face are above average. Minnesota is second, New Orleans is fifth, twice. So that's a gauntlet of great passing offenses that are coming. And so I broke down the numbers simply in terms of points allowed and yards per play, how the defense looks basically against bad and against good passing offenses. And the results are quite interesting. When the Falcons face a good passing offense, they allow 27 points per game and 5.4 yards per play. And when they play a bad passing offense or a below average passing offense, then they allow 19 points per game and 4.8 yards per play. So that's 8 points less and more than half a yard less per play when they play below average. And you can expect it, of course, from every defense, but an 8 point differential, that's pretty staggering. That's like giving up another touchdown and 2 point conversion every time, just depending on the quality of opposition. And when you put those numbers into a league-wide context, the Falcons look like the Philadelphia defense when they play the Jay Cutlers of the world and the Mike Lennons of the world. And they look like the San Francisco defense when they play New England and Russell Wilson and Matthew Stafford. And so looking forward, considering that we are having basically only good passing offenses coming at us, I would be really careful with having too high expectations of like this performance that we saw against Dallas and against Seattle continuing forward. I would more think that the script for the upcoming games will more likely look like shootouts where the offense will have to put 30 on the board to win the game. Because Tampa Bay is going to have this asterisk with Fitzpatrick when we're not going to really know how well this offense would have worked with James Winston. But I think this Minnesota game is kind of really the litmus test of this season. If this defense is really, like they say, coming together, then they're going to have a good performance against Minnesota. And if they perform like they did so far, they are going to really struggle against Case Keenum. And so we will know by then, I think in week, 13? Should be by then? That's when we will know the true identity of this defense. And I just found it interesting that it really correlates, basically breaks down with the passing offense of the opposing team. And this 8 point differential, that's really going to be the story if they can really manage to continue this performance that they did the last 2 weeks, then that would be a new Falcons defense that we have not yet seen so far. And I'm hopeful that it happens. But as I said, so far we have yet to see them perform well against a quality opponent.
Other than Seattle.
Other than Seattle, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's interesting.
And then Seattle is the 14th best passing offense. As I said, it's a very binary, black and white way of divvying up things. But I also hear, I mean, on Twitter, people are also always saying, like, all that matters is points and everything. And I kind of agree with that. But I think it's also noteworthy to look at other type of metrics. And so, but I wanted to include real points allowed in this just to have a very broad view of how the team is performing. And yes, Seattle, the 14th best passing offense, they performed quite well against them. And New England was the best that we played, and that did not look so good.
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole points allowed thing, I think that's the correct way when you're sort of judging wins and losses, because obviously the whole goal of the game is to score more points than your opponent. So I think, but when you're sort of evaluating how the quality of a defense, I think you have to sort of, you know, if you really want to do a good, thorough job, you can't just look at points allowed. Like last year, you know, the Patriots were the number one scoring defense in the league, but I think very few people would have considered them to be the best defense. But by that metric alone, they were, and sort of, you saw a lot of people, you know, talking heads on television that would be like, oh yeah, the Patriots have the best defense in the league. And it's like, well, they played some really bad offenses throughout the season. And, you know, they have a good red zone defense, but, you know, in other areas, they're not really more than sort of an average to below average defense in a lot of ways. So I do think when people sort of reduce it down to, oh, the Falcons only gave up X number of points, that means the defense is playing well. I'm like, oh, I don't think so. But
I totally agree. I think it's a very broad stroke tool to evaluate the team. And I think if you look at other stuff, the reality is always more complex than just points allowed. That's just the base result of the game is points allowed, but the reality behind it, how you come to those points and what happens on the way to there is much more complex, and that's why you have to dig deeper into the other stuff. I think quite interesting. I did not expect it. I don't know how you feel about it. But in terms of points allowed per red zone trip, the Falcons are ninth this year, the defense. That was kind of an interesting wrinkle.
I think generally speaking, when I'm looking at a defense performance, there's a couple of categories I'm looking at. Obviously, points allowed. I don't really pay too much attention to yards allowed, but it is something I will occasionally glance at. I like to look at third down defense. I like to look at red zone defense. I like to look at pass rush, and obviously the main one of that is sacks. And those typically, I think if you tend to grade highly in all four of those categories, you are a legitimate top talent defense. But if sometimes you'll find defenses that tend to grade well in one of those categories and then sort of are average or below average in the other ones. And, I don't know exactly where the Falcons red zone defense is right now, but I remember earlier in the season seeing the third down defense and the red zone defense were significantly improved from last year. Because they were like the worst red zone defense in the league, and I think they were below average on third downs, but it sort of depended on what point of the season you were looking at. And so those are two areas where I do think the defense has improved mightily. The issue has been their inability to get third down stops in the third quarter of games. That really has been problematic for them throughout the season, not so much the last couple of games. But and I think there are positive strides that the defense has made, and I just, you know, I wish they – for most of the season, and part of my criticism is that has been a stride that has been consistent, you know, throughout the entire course of the game, and not have these sort of two really good quarters of defensive play and then two bad quarters of defensive play. And I wish they could actually stop the run to a competent level, which they have done the last 2 weeks, you know, if you discount the quarterback running. So that's a positive step. And I think this defense has a lot of potential, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, the offense, I think, has made strides in the last two games, obviously, but I don't fully trust the offense quite yet. And so I'm putting a little bit more faith that maybe this is the similar point in the season like we saw last year, where the defense really started to pick it up, and hopefully they can carry it over. Because I do think, as you say, we're going to need these guys to play a little bit better against some of these teams, particularly New Orleans, and it's weird to consider Minnesota to be a good offense with Case Clean and without Dalvin Cook but you know Thielen and Stephon Diggs have been playing really well, and Jerick McKinnon has filled in admirably for Dalvin Cook, and Case Keenum is certainly making a case to be the next Mike Glennon, at least as far as getting paid this upcoming offseason. So we'll see how it goes. Yeah.
No, definitely. I totally agree. The third quarter defense has been atrocious. That was really the biggest problem so far. Looking at just success rate versus the run, they are 30th, and versus the pass, they are 28th in the third quarter. That's just it's really hard to kind of get defensive stops that way. And I think that speaks also to the rookie season that Marquand Manuel is having, and he's also learning on the fly. I mean, nobody's talking about that, right? It's just a Sarkisian problem. But nobody's talking that Manuel is also learning to call plays and learning to adapt a game plan to what the opponent is doing, and how much the defense has struggled in the third quarter is really a testament to that effect, I think. So I think it's good that they are making strides in that direction. I think that's really important. And yes, I expect and I hope if this team is going to put together a complete performance, it's going to depend on the defense also making those strides. And so it was encouraging to see it against Seattle, and I hope they keep it up. And Minnesota and New Orleans will definitely be the big tests in that regard. Just looking at success rate, because I know you are a fan of success rate, just like myself as well. I found something interesting for the offense of the Falcons, and that is that their success rate really breaks down, really increases when they run the ball in the second quarter. And I wondered if there is any rhyme or reason to that. They are 22nd in the first quarter, 19th in the third, 25th in the fourth quarter, and the second best running offense in the second quarter. That's like the only time when the Falcons successfully run the ball is in the second quarter of the game. And I found that quite interesting because I cannot explain it, and I have no idea. Maybe it's just randomness, but maybe you have a thought there why this is happening. Or
I have noticed that when I've been breaking down stuff, that they tend to do better. Like even in the games where they struggle to run the football, they tend to do better in the second quarter. I can't sit here and pinpoint any specific reason. Maybe if I thought about it more, I might be able to come up with a theory as to why it is, but off the top of my head, I can't think of anything specific. It's just generally speaking, I don't know, maybe they're feeding Devontae Freeman more, because it just seems like their offense, just their running game at least, certainly clicks a lot better when Devontae's in the game. Opposed to Tevin Coleman, and that's not meant to be a knock on Tevin Coleman, but it certainly, there is a pretty big disparity between those two guys, at least for most of the season has been. Coleman tends to be up and down, but there have been several games where Coleman has been right there neck and neck with Devontae, but it isn't as consistent. Like Devontae's consistency this year has been really amazing in terms of his efficiency running the football.
Yeah. No, I totally agree that he's really carrying this offense in a different way and in a different level when he's in there and healthy. That's just a much better, a well-oiled run game. And with Coleman, you have to stutter and stop sometimes, and then occasionally it will look really amazing. But yeah, I agree. I'm also really impressed by the way Freeman has carried on his performance from last season. I think maybe one explanation that I can come up with, like on the fly, is that in the first quarter, the passing success rate is the best in the league. So that's like kind of they come out of the gates, and Matt Ryan is basically shredding defenses in the first quarter, and then the opponent adjusts to that fact, and that opens up the running lanes in the second quarter for Devontae and Tevin Coleman to run through. That would kind of be the only analysis I can come up with here on the spot, but that's something maybe to continue to monitor and see if it holds up. If it is like that, then it is also a testament to Sarkisian being able to, you know, put together a quite decent first half game plan, and then if he can figure out how to do the third quarter and the fourth quarter like he did in the last two games, then maybe he can quiet some of his critics and some of the Gary Kubiak fans out there.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that, because now that you put that out there and now that's in my head, I'm thinking, like, one of the knocks on Sark has been that, you know, initially the first 15 or 20 plays, the offense clicks. And maybe, you know, when he's sort of scripting those first 15 or 20 plays with the passing game, it's clicking. And then, you know, sort of switching, usually that 15 play window usually winds up lasting into the beginning of the second quarter or the middle, partway through the second quarter. And maybe at that point when he's trying to figure out what he wants to do, he starts to lean a little bit more heavily on the running game, and for various reasons, it's more effective at that point. Maybe because of the passing game's success earlier and defenses still sort of being keyed in on Julio Jones, and then at a certain point, teams make that adjustment. And then, you know, we've seen, not so much recently, but we've seen in the past where all of a sudden, now that teams can stop the run and he's, for whatever reason, the passing game isn't clicking in the third quarter, then the offense completely stagnates and the defense has given up 6-minute drives, and it's just been very, very ugly third quarters for the Falcons for most of the season. And then they sort of figure it out in the fourth quarter, and then they make it interesting, and whether or not they win, you know, has been a little bit up and down this year. But maybe that's a theory. There's certainly something worth monitoring to see if that's, you know, something that the team has gotten over, or who knows. But it's certainly an interesting proposition, maybe to keep an eye on through the rest of the season.
Definitely, yeah.
Marco, do you have anything else that you want to discuss before we get out of here?
No, I think that was basically most of the stuff that I kind of looked into this week. And I mean, I always will come up with new stuff, and we're just going to hash that out on Twitter or wherever else we might discuss these things. So, yeah, that would be everything.
I like that you teased a little bit. I'll be open with the people. Marco is one of the people that I'm hoping to get on LockedOnFalcons.com to contribute weekly statistical content, sort of issues behind the scenes, sort of dragging their feet to get that hooked up so far this season. But it's been something that he and I have been discussing since September to possibly do. And hopefully we can start, you know, getting that sort of content up on LockedOnFalcons.com before the season is up. But in the meantime, Marco, if people want to hit you up and get into some of these debates, and I'm sure these, now that we're at 280 characters on Twitter, these things can be very, very long and chaotic. But let the people know where they can find you on the interwebs.
Yeah, you can find me at Vienna Falcons on Twitter. That's at VIENNA Falcons. And yeah, I'm always open to good banter and good Falcons talk and stats and analysis talk. And so just feel free to hit me up there.
I should warn people, though, Marco, you would consider yourself in the pro-Sark camp?
I consider myself in the pro Falcons. The Falcons offense is not as terrible as we think it is camp. Yeah. So in that sense, Sark is definitely not, I'm not lighting up my torches.
Okay. I just want to give people some warning, because, you know, they might, they might say the wrong thing and it might get into a long Twitter debate. So know what you're getting yourself into if you go at Marco online. So
absolutely.
Yeah. I am in a neutral camp with Sark. I am like, there's certain things I do not like and I will not probably ever like. I certainly think some of the criticism he's gotten has been a little bit too heavy in certain regards. So I can dance in both camps if need be. So when I talk to you, I'm anti-Sark, and when I talk to 98% of the fan base, I'm pro-Sark.
Yeah. No, I agree. I also don't love everything that he does. It's really, there's no question about it that this offense looks different and feels different and has concepts missing that have proven to be very effective, and he is not willing or not able to integrate them again. And it's been frustrating at times, but I think, you know, it's always really, it's comes down to the perspective that you are, the expectations that you are having. And it was clear that with the success of last year, that the bar was simply high and that the people, tend to judge him on that level. And of course, he's not going to produce a top 10 historic offense because that simply does not happen that often. But I just try to live with that fact as much as possible and just see what is there. And what is there is still a top 10 offense that is working better and better as the year progresses. And so that's kind of all I need to know looking forward to the next few games. And if they then get shut out by the Vikings, then I'm also ready to light up some torches and talk about Gary Kubiak. But until then, let's just keep our expectations a little bit in check and let's see what's coming.
Yeah. I'll say this for sure. I thought against Seattle, they looked a lot like the Shanahan offense terms of what they were running and the things that they were utilizing. It was very reminiscent of what we saw last year. So kudos to him. I don't know if he basically just stole the exact same game plan they used against the Seahawks last year as possible. I think the other most Shanahan-like game was also against the Packers. So, that's interesting to me. Maybe that's a coincidence. We'll see how it goes against Tampa Bay. They did play Tampa Bay quite a bit last year, very effectively. So maybe that's a trend that, at least in some of these divisional games, that may be something that we can count on a little bit if the offense needs a spark. So we'll see what happens.
I saw you tweeted that about Seahawks and Green Bay, and then I really went back and looked at least win-loss record of Dan Quinn in games versus familiar opponents and games versus opponents that he's not familiar with. And the Falcons do tend to be better against teams that he has already played once and schemed against once in recent times. So that basically should bode well for the Tampa game. And yes, it might explain a little bit why the Seattle games and the Packer game looked so similar and the same things worked back then. So that's also maybe something to keep in mind looking forward now with the divisional gauntlet coming up. Maybe Dan Quinn can summon some of this mojo that basically always has a trick up its sleeve when he plays somebody that he's already went up against.
Yeah, and I know somebody's yelling like, what about the Carolina game? Well, as many people have said, Julio had maybe...
Or not, the Patriots game.
Yeah, that's another conversation for another day. Yeah, that's a whole other podcast right there. Certainly as all things is, it doesn't necessarily, it's not a one-to-one correspondence, but it certainly does seem like, for the most part, that is something that does feel true, especially given the struggles that they had against the AFC East this year. Certainly this year that feels true.
Exactly, yeah.
All right, Marco, I appreciate you coming on and doing this fan talk with me, and I hope the listeners appreciate it as well. I think you always do give some interesting statistical insights that certainly allow me to, that make me think at least, and certainly challenge me to think. And I'll certainly give more thought to that whole first, second quarter offensive dichotomy as I watch the film. From this point forward, to see if maybe there's something to that that we can at least put our finger on, as opposed to just simply guessing and be like, I don't know, it's magic or whatever. But
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'm really happy that you put me on the show again. This is now basically the third time we record this, because the first time we had to do two takes. And this time it's really like, I'm really sorry that I kept you from watching Pitt 2 minutes to go in the fourth, 24-14. So
I'm going to stay away from the game. They're doing well. They've done a lot better when I gave up on their season. So I figure I'm the jinx. And so I'm just going to stay away. And, that'll be a game if they wind up pulling it off, or even if they wind up losing, certainly it'd be a game out. I'll definitely rewatch, because I'm sure I'm DVRing it. Yeah, it's interesting that Pitt seems to do this every now and then, yeah. Knock somebody out of the national title contention. They didn't really do it to Clemson last year, but it certainly got hairy for them at the end. Cool.
Yeah, if it holds up, congratulations on that. And thank you for having me on during such a memorable game, probably memorable game for your team.
All right, man. Hopefully the Falcons can have some memorable games coming up.
Let's hope, yeah.
All right, Marco, you have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Thanks.
All right, guys, that was Marco. Appreciate him coming on, doing another fan talk. We're now in the double-dipping phase. Got a couple of people that have sent in emails. I'm sorry, I don't know why I blinked on the word emails. Sent in emails about doing additional fan talks. As I said, we got a couple of people. Got one scheduled for next week as well on deck. And we'll keep these things pumping over these last couple of weeks. If you want to get in a fan talk, there's a chance if you send in an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com, you will be able to get a fan talk in before the season is up. And hopefully if the Falcons continue to play into January, then maybe that will be an option for you as well. But if not, then you'll be one of the early ones in the offseason, because this is something that we'll probably plan on keeping going in the offseason. I don't imagine this is going to be some massive overturning offseason for the Falcons. I think it'll be sort of business as usual like it was last year. And so, you know, there will be times when there is lulls in content. Having fan talk episodes talking to you guys about, you know, at that point in time, we'll talk about what happened this season. Hopefully something good as opposed to last year when it was something bad. At the end, obviously, good things happened up until that point. But, we'll figure it out. And so, again, if you want to get in on one of these fan talk episodes, by all means, send in an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. If you've already done a fan talk, and I think now we're up to like 14 or 15 of them at this point in time, then, you know, by all means, if you want to come back on, I imagine many of you do, by all means, shoot me an email as well, and then we'll see if we can get those things set up for later this year or early offseason, possibly. So do that. Other ways you can get in touch with the show, you can also hit me up on Twitter @FalcFans. Of course, the show's Twitter handle is LockedOnFalcons, so if it is podcast-related, either let me know in your tweet to FalcFans or just send it over to LockedOnFalcons on Twitter, and that way I will know it's podcast-related. If you don't like character limits, email is off. Obviously a pathway, but also Facebook, Locked On Falcons, is the Facebook page. Give us a like while you're there. You can also post a comment on FalcFans.com or LockedOnFalcons.com, where the podcast is posted daily. I should also remind you guys at LockedOnFalcons.com this week, possibly as you're listening to this, hopefully that's the plan, there is a mailbag article up on LockedOnFalcons.com answering your guys' film questions about the Falcons-Seahawks film. Since we didn't, due to the holiday week of Thanksgiving and whatnot, we did not record a typical All-22 Q&A for Wednesday like we normally do. And so instead, you will see my answers to your mailbag questions up on LockedOnFalcons.com. And as I usually do when, you know, yeah, I don't have to explain the leftovers. If you haven't been listening to the show the last couple of weeks, then you don't know what I'm talking about. But just listen to it next week when we get back to our regular schedule, and I'll talk about it. So LockedOnFalcons.com, great content up there, additional content in addition to the podcast as well. Pro Football Focus Edge subscription. That's something that you guys are interested in, right? How do you win a Pro Football Focus Edge subscription? Well, before I tell you how you win, let me tell you what you get, because you got to entice it. You got to bite the line. You get player rankings, player grades, position rankings, fantasy projections, tools and charts, draft coverage, all that stuff that you come to love from Pro Football Focus. And it's a $40 value, but you can get it free. All you have to do is go on Locked On Falcons on iTunes, submit a 5-star review, leave your Twitter handle in the review, and then you will randomly, and then you will be entered into a random drawing at the end of each week. One random winner will be selected from those that leave that 5-star review and include their Twitter handle in the review to win a Pro Football Focus Edge subscription for free, $40 value. Again, I'm repeating myself all over again because I'm going off script, but it is what it is, guys, and that's something that you guys want to win. If you do not win that random drawing, then you can still get the great Pro Football Focus content on the Locked On Podcast Network by checking out Mike Renner every Wednesday on Locked On NFL with Matt Williamson, as well as Jeff Radcliffe, the director of fantasy for Pro Football Focus, on Locked On Fantasy every Thursday. Yeah, there you go. That's it, guys. I appreciate you guys for bearing with me this last week where we've been a little bit off and on schedule and sort of switching things around. Next week, we will get back to our regularly scheduled program with the usual 5-day-a-week format: Monday, rapid reaction; Tuesday, recap; Wednesday, all 22 review; Thursday, probably the crossover pod, assuming the schedules work out; and then a fan talk on Friday. So that's the plan right now, and I'll let you guys know if there's any changes to that plan moving forward, but that should be the usual schedule for the rest of the season, as we have done in the last couple of weeks. But this week, due to circumstances, we had to sort of rearrange things, and hopefully the Falcons will take care of business this Sunday in this the most winnable game they have the rest of the season, a home game against the Buccaneers. So hopefully we're not freaking out, you know, on Monday show. So that'll be a positive for once on this podcast. But until then, guys, you guys stay locked on. Hopefully the Falcons rise up, and you will always be in my brotherhood.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
When I do that, it always doesn't work. I like the in brotherhood thing. It doesn't work for me. I'm sorry. Even all season long, I'm not clever enough, or it's just a hashtag that just doesn't work for me. I just don't get it. Like, in brotherhood, like, it's great for the team, but like, where can I insert it into a sentence that makes perfect sense? It just sounds awkward. You guys stay locked on. The team rises up. But where is the in brotherhood part? You guys let me know. Please let me know where I can use that better. Maybe I'm just bad at this. Definitely I'm just bad at this, but, you know, maybe I can improve in that area. So please get at me. Let me know how I can use hashtag in brotherhood to sign off on the show that doesn't sound so awkward and out of place in comparison to the other hashtags.